say, and you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets
Good morning. Welcome back to the Outdoor Show, hour number three already, and it is 6:02 here in the Bayou City. All right, let's head down Corpus Christi Way and check in with our good friend, Captain Cliff Webb. Always look forward to Saturday mornings. Cliff, good morning. What's up, man?
Morning, Mickey. Well, I needed that music to wake me up there. I appreciate that.
That's
that
it. I'm kind of sleepy this morning, too. I almost fell asleep talking to Jeff Goat earlier, 5 o'clock.
Oh, no. Oh, I think I had my grandson over all day yesterday, and I'm whooped. I'm just not
trying
to
do it. My there you go.
God, I'm trying to keep up with him, man.
Oh,
Last thing I did, he went out of, he found a couple of paddles out in the backyard, some kind of beach paddles where you play paddle ball, and he wore me out in the backyard trying to keep up with him. I think he hits the ball over my head just to watch Grandpa chase it, you know.
Oh, man. That's when I look at him and say, you go get it.
Yeah, well, that was it, dude. But
you got
plenty of energy. I had a good week of. Man, he was off. My grandson was off Monday. It was Columbus Day, and
right.
So we went out, and my son's got that place at Mathis, that 22 acres. So
uh-huh.
I bought him a single shot 410. So I went out to shoot birds with him on Monday, and I didn't even take my shotgun out of the truck. I just put a chair next to him, and I was his reloader. So he's shooting that single shot, and I was reloading. He was burning some powder. God, we had fun, man. We didn't kill a lot, but there was a lot of lead in the air is all I can say.
Well, that's good stuff. That's all that matters. How old is your grandson?
He's 9, you know, and he likes to smell that powder.
Oh,
that 410 powder has a certain smell to it. You know, it's just good to
it
pop
does.
That stuff.
When you break the barrel open, when I was a kid, I always used to smell that smoke coming out of there. I love that smell.
Well, you know, I had the same gun he's got. It was a little topper, I think, a little single shot.
Uh-huh.
Same thing when I was 9. I shot everything with it, you know. So it's brought back old memories, you know, shooting that little 410. And the first, when you first get them, they're hard to open, you know, and you crack them open, they're real
stiff. You got to break them in,
And so that's what we're doing. We're trying to, he's always worried about shells. He goes, my grandpa, he said, I said, look, I'm going to keep you in shells. I can afford to keep you in shells.
We're not
going to
run out.
As long as you're shooting a single shot, I'll keep you in shells. Now, when you go to automatic, we're going to have to talk to your dad. But right now, I'm keeping you in shells. But anyway, that was fun as heck, shooting with him Monday. So, and then I got to, you know, the beach fish has been, it's crazy how you got to go south to catch fish in the beach. They're here, you know, around Packer stuff, but the farther you go south, Mickey, the better the beach.
The better
fishing
it gets, the farther you go down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a guy yesterday, or day before yesterday, catch two nice flounder off the rocks, right at daylight, but on mullet.
Mm.
You know, there's the water is just, I mean, it's rubbing alcohol clear, just super, super clear.
You know, I saw you can see the fish. Somebody had a video. Somebody caught a snook or something and down there at Packery, and they're videoing it, and the water was just like, man, just gin clear. I mean, I couldn't believe that they're catching anything in that air clear water like that.
Oh, it's the amount of fish that are there and what we're catching. Stupid. It's a daylight thing, live bait or right at daylight. You know, if you're going to catch them, but you know, they're there, and some of the jellyfish have finally pulled out of here. We had a deal here where you couldn't hardly surf or swim or anything because of the amount of jellyfish that they started to pull out here.
Moon and jellyfish.
I saw them yesterday just whacking the redfish off the rocks again yesterday when I went out there. So it kind of comes and goes.
That's going on from Port Isabel all the way to Venice, Louisiana right now, and the surf bull red fishing is off the charts.
Hey, when does the tarpon kind of stop in the surf? Is it end of November?
It just depends on the water temperature, whether they have to take off, start moving south again. But, like Brian said in that video the other day, he said tarpon season's not over till the boys down south say it is.
That's good stuff.
Because he's the first one to get them, the last one to catch them, you know, just the way the movement is.
Yeah, well, Bob's been, my Jetty Bob has been going over and walking down there in the rocks, and he's had a lot of current, a lot of brown water coming out of the bay and stuff at times, but the tarpon are still in Port Aransas and off St. Joe Island right now. It's just the weather's been messing him up with his high tides and stuff.
Right.
So I'm thinking he's telling me he caught him all 1 year all the way through past Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And that's just nuts, you know, so it just depends on the weather.
It does. You know, if we get a lot of strong early cool fronts, it changes things. But right now, I mean, they're all still where they've been all the last month and a half, 2 months.
Yeah, and our crawfish, I fished this week, and our water is just crazy high, Mickey, like it is everywhere else. And, you know, I was talking to Chad at the doctor that 37, he fished all week too, and he said, it's just like everybody else. We started out catching 4, 5, 7 fish a day, just so scattered. And as the week has gone on, behind the moon phase we're on right now, we're starting to catch more. I think he had 19. I think we're catching fish. Friday, I went out and just worked plastics, caught plenty of fish, not a lot of big fish, but it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. As the water was falling out, I'm getting a little bit of flow along the ICW, and those fish are pulling off the drop-offs, and they're following the bait down the edge. But what's getting ready to go on after this week is I love this time of year when you get that nice little front like we're going to get Sunday, and it'll pull those big lines of bait down the shoreline. And you're like, I think you and I did that one day where we drifted those baits, you know, and all those fish were under them.
Just piled up finger mullet, middle mullet, horse mullet. I mean, a mixture of all of it. Those fish were in there too, buddy.
They're getting ready to do that. And the whole trick to that is now that we have a current down the King Ranch shoreline, some other currents, the bottom structure changes a lot during the year. It depends on how much storm and stuff we have. And you can always tell where the fish are with these big big streams of mullet. You'll have 2 miles of this mullet coming down the shore, and you'll all be in a straight line. And you'll look down there, and there'll be a big bow in that line, and that's where there's a hump in the bottom. There's a hump there in the bottom where it went to 6 foot, to 4 foot, to 3 foot, and those fish are popping around that hump, ambushing those mullet. And the mullet will let you know because they don't want to swim over that hump. They'll swim around
it. They'll go around it.
You can just watch that flow of bait and just target that area. And it's funny how so much of this area has changed this year from current. You know, you got big dead grass beds where we didn't have big dead grass beds. You got sand pockets where we didn't have sand pockets. So don't think that all your little spots are going to be the same. They're not. You got to go this time of year.
It changes from year to year, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It really does down here. Of course, we haven't had much rain. We're just really hurt for rain. So,
I'm hoping that'll. I think there's a burn ban in every county in Texas except around the Lake Jackson area. You know, they were getting rain when nobody else would, but man, it is powder dry. Grass is all the grass is dead. Don't pull your truck off the side of the highway.
Oh, I know it. You'll catch on fire.
You'll burn the whole world down. Mm-hmm. I mean, that hot catalytic converter and exhaust and all that. It was just. I saw a light company vehicle fix a pole the other day, and you can see where their vehicle was sitting. I can't believe it didn't catch on fire.
My dad caught the whole King Ranch on fire one time. He was a game warden, and he went out there, they heard some shots, and so they run out there to catch this poacher, you know, and he pulls out in the tall grass, and he's sitting all of a sudden, it's on fire. He said the only thing to say, dude, he had a fire extinguisher in the patrol car.
Wow.
And he said he looked in the back, and it was flames everywhere. He was getting ready to burn down the whole King Ranch. So those game wardens learned that, you know, you can't pull out of that grass. You got to stay on the cliche roads and stuff. But, man, that's just crazy.
A lot of people carry a fire extinguisher in their vehicle.
I carry one all the time. You know, it's funny, I carry two in the boat. I don't know why. You know, I've only had one fire in the boat.
Well, in case one of those dials goes bad on you from full, you know, and gets over in the red, and then you can hand the game warden the other one to go, well, this one's good. So
that's what happens. See, that one is, that snapped on the little deal. You got to keep checking it, because every once in a while
they'll
go bad,
man. I mean,
yes, they will. They'll go bad on you. But it's so funny talking about catalytic converters. Someone stole my neighbor's, the catalytic converter. Is that what they steal?
They'll get under there with a sawzall.
He fired that truck up yesterday morning. It sounded like a tank.
Like a thrashing machine, man.
It was, man, I can't believe how noisy it was. But he didn't have any choice to drive it over to the dealer and get another one. It's not cheap.
Yeah, if you own a diesel, they'll cut off your DPF, you know, muffler and everything, and your muffler, too. And that's big money. Big money.
Well, do the new trucks and stuff have a deal where they can't get into the catalytic converter? I'm seeing this mostly old trucks. Have they stopped that yet? Or
man, I don't know. I don't know about
that. I was wondering. You think they would make some kind of a deal to stop that? Because, boy, it got real. There was a bunch of it going on here in town that kind of slowed it down a little bit.
Been going on everywhere. Different world we live in today, buddy.
Oh, man. That's how my buddy puts in a bird on. He goes back and they stole all four of his tires off the trailer, rim and everything.
That's crazy. Yeah.
You know, all four of them.
You can't even go in there with an open container without getting busted. But where were the refuge police when they did all that? See?
Yeah, well, it's funny. It's something else, man. But we're looking at this week, I'm hoping we're going to get back to getting some of this water here, Mickey. We got tons of fish, but you talk about scattering some fish out. Now, you can walk up in the sand, you know, knee deep, and you can side cast reds and a few trout, but they're just not bunched up in the pods.
No, they're not going to school up when the water's like that and they spread out. And there's a lot of movement going on, too. These fish are in that mode. They're following bait and staying with certain types of bait they like, and getting ready to establish that, late fall, early winter pattern where they're going to spend the winter.
Yeah, we have not had a flounder. When I was talking to Chad, he talked to Jay for a little while, and he said it was real slow in Rockport. They were only catching two or three trout a day back this week in Rockport. So it seems to be kind of up and down the coast with the higher temperatures. We're still at, almost 80 degrees in the water or higher.
I think the real transition is going on right now. It's usually earlier, that September, early October thing, but I think it's everything's going to run a little bit later this year for whatever reason. Some years early, some years late, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every year's different.
Works, dude.
Well, I'm kind of waiting for Halloween.
Let me do this commercial break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk some more. We'll get on these flounders for a minute. All right, buddy. All right, dog. All right. Well, folks, Bayou City Angler, they're Houston's fishing outfitter. They stock a wide variety of the industry's best gear by the most trusted brands. Wade fishing gear, fly fishing gear, fly tying components, along with rods, reels, lines, and lures. You name it, they have it. Great inventory of Waterloo rods, like the Slam Mag and the HP Light that everybody's so fond of. And check out their Shimano reels, Luz reels, Sims gear, Southerly, and Poncho, just to name a few. And offshore tackle for the serious angler, they've got plenty of that. And be sure to go by and visit a very nice tackle store, and it's trusted by our community with great service. It's easy to find, 8933 Katy Freeway. That's next to Carter's Country and Good Company Barbecue. Again, 8933 Katy Freeway. Here's their number, 832-831-3104. Bayou City Angler, Houston's fishing outfitter. Good morning. Welcome back to the Outdoor Show. All right, it's 6:19. All right, Cliff, we are back, man. We're talking about the old flounder run. It's it just hadn't kicked in yet, and man,
no,
November will be here before you know it, and then we won't be able to keep them.
Well, you know, it's just the number of flounder are just so off down here in Corpus. But I just don't get it. You know, it's just we haven't had flounder for a few years like we used to. I just don't know. It's got to do something to do with the weather, environment, something, because it just can't be. It can't be all the fishermen. And we have do have a lot of flounder rigs because our water's so clear. But still, man, the flounder runs we used to have, Mickey, were unbelievable. Yeah, I know you did too.
Y'all's water stays so clean and clear now that they're real vulnerable for floundering at night. Like, a lot of them get clean, clear water, man.
Yes, and also drum. You know, I saw a picture that guy probably had 2,000 pounds of drum where they gig at night. You know, they go into flats and they gig all the drum commercially. So really? The drum numbers are getting down in the sheep head, and they're gigging sheep head. They're also gigging those skates, those big old stingray for shark bait.
Right.
And I don't think they ever gig enough though. We got millions of them. But I was talking to those gear guys how hard they are to. You said they're so big, and you gig them, you throw them in a boat, they beat the sides out of your boat, they soak you wet. So I can imagine gigging one of those things and putting it in the boat. Can you? God,
I'm good.
I'm good. I just,
I'm good. I'll El Paso on that one.
Yeah, But I guess the neatest video I've seen all year was that guy that was in that flounder boat going down St. Joe Island next to those rocks. That was some incredible video, and that day was real calm. How many fish are on those rocks? And the same thing in Packer. What's happened at Packer, they put all those round rocks and rolled them off the edges, so it just destroyed the fishing on those rocks. You only have the end to fish on now, but the rest of the rocks, you can't walk on them.
Yeah, they filled in all the little nooks and crannies, didn't they?
Yes, with round rocks. And then the other thing is you can't get to the water to fish, so it cut out miles of people's fishing, so it just destroyed the whole area to fish. It was stupid engineering. And the boat ramp they built, no one can launch there because it's too steep. I mean, you can't get your boat in. And then it filled up with sand that's 6 inches deep. So it's just typical Corpus. I just love it down here. They had an argument. You'd love the argument with the water the other day at the city council. I mean, they were handcuffing people, Mickey, and taking them out of there. And it was just, they haven't even got a plan yet. They didn't even got any idea what they're going to do yet. It was pretty funny watching the news down here and, our news media is pretty bad down here. They don't tell you much of the news. We got to listen to Houston to find out what's really going on in Corpus. It's pretty funny.
They do that to take the heat and the light off the community. You don't want to tell you what's really going on in your own city.
I don't want to tell you what's really going on.
They're afraid you won't even go out and buy a bag of popcorn, man. Shelter in place.
I don't know, but Corpus is pretty mellow, but there's just no growth. They just can't seem to get the infrastructure stuff right down here. You go to Houston, they just like clockwork pretty much. My son came down. He was in McAllen working, so he stopped over this week and spent the night with us here at the house and got to hear about all of his travel and stuff. But man, Houston really doesn't miss a beat. They had a little electrical issue with electrical problems there one time, but other than that, the city runs. City runs pretty smooth. You don't run out of water or anything,
Well, drive through the streets and hit all them potholes. You better have a four wheel drive truck.
We got that too.
That's
God Almighty, man.
Pretty inferior infrastructure.
Uh huh. I don't think it's going to get any better here, Mickey. God Almighty, man.
That's why I like living out in the country. You can you expect that.
Hey, and you sent me that picture of that black coyote. You can't believe how many people. I had never seen that, and I've sent that to some people, and I'm getting all this feedback on it. And evidently, that hardly ever happens in South Texas. It's mostly up north.
The Northeast, they say about 1%. Of the coyote population up that way, you'll see a black one like that, but they're real, real uncommon coming down this way into the Southeast. You see a few here, but way south where you're at, it's really rare. And all my years around, I've been here a while, and I've never seen one. All the outdoor stuff I've done and everything else, That was just a shocker.
Yeah, and that was by your house? Where you
right
live?
Next to my fence line before the highway there, yeah.
I mean, God Almighty.
My lab just went bolting off the porch. It was like 11 o'clock at night. I was fixing to go to bed, and ball games were over, and I got spotlight out, and I hit them, and I saw those eyes, and then I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was just a regular coyote with a black one running in a pair.
Yeah, trotting right down
the fence line, plain as day.
Yeah, you know, you always hear the black panthers and other cats, but I didn't know that was ever a possibility in a coyote. I learned something then. Golly.
Melanistic. Yeah. They claim up north, you know, the coyotes and the timber wolves crossbreed, you know, and you'll get that because, you know, you see a lot of black wolves. And and it's kind of gone down through the coyote gene pool, too. So it was pretty rare, though. You don't see something like that every day. Not around here.
Yeah, we were watching this year those coyotes fishing, how they get out behind the mullet and run at them and jump up on the beach and catch them. That's pretty smart how they figure that out. They go out in about, you know, belly deep water, and they run real fast toward the shore, and the mullet will jump up on the shore, or they'll catch one in the shallow water. But
right,
I guess they had to watch the other ones to figure it out. But that was pretty neat to watch.
Well, I'm still, you know, two animals we saw swim across Intercoastal that day in the land cut when we were running. Remember that? They jumped up.
Yeah.
Those had to be giant river otters, man.
That's the only thing it could have been.
That's all they could have been. And I was shocked to see that down there. You know, that's kind of common up here. You'll see a lot of otters, but I'm in South Texas.
Well, I never knew you had them in Houston, otters. I never knew that until I looked it up.
They're real thick over my way in this. The wintertime, they come down the bayous like Cedar Bayou and Trinity River and all that, and we'll see them in the edges of the bay, and they're just going to go to where the food source is.
Yeah, we're talking about weird stuff, and we're talking about the guys are seeing these alligator gar, these big alligator gar back in Amazon, and I didn't believe them, and they were catching them on croakers and bringing them in, but that's unusual. I've seen one about maybe 100 pounds swimming down the land cut. But it's funny how you see stuff just out of place down here, just out of place, just crazy.
But I wish I lived down there.
It's just crazy, Mickey, how this time of year when everybody starts dove hunting stuff, just the whole Laguna Madre is just really quiet. Now, they got the people on the weekends, still the tourist stuff, but the rest of the time, man, it's just back to the good old days where
you
can run around.
Live down there where you're at, man. You got big time trout fishery. You got big time bird hunting and big time deer hunting. It's all right
but
there. It's real accessible,
and
easy, convenient.
Yeah, and I think our city's finally realizing we don't have but two or three boat ramps, and they're going to have to. You know, our boat ramp situation has gotten serious, and so they're going to have to do something with these ramps. You know, the ones that the city built, they don't work. They're not the right deal. People can't get their boats in, so they need to have some people come in here and build some boat ramps, because
the best facility on the whole Texas coast is tucked away in a little fishing community called Matagorda, Texas.
I cannot believe I went up there and fished with the Gunthers and those guys up there in Charlie. I could not believe that marina that you guys got over there. We don't have nothing like that here, Mickey.
Yeah, Matagorda, the harbor is just an awesome facility.
Yeah, and you know, we just don't have anything. Market 37 is about the biggest thing we've got on our side. And then, you know, the dock is, you know, you take seven boats and then the dock is pretty much full.
It's overwhelmed.
It's overwhelmed.
It's covered up.
And then, and now with all the water issues, they're not letting them, you know, do anything else, dredge anything out there, run any more water lines to behind the piers to make more parking areas. So that's going to be serious. It's eventually going to, you know, and that's what our weathermen, all of our news people have been talking about, this water shortage since the 80s. And not one person has ever did anything about it. And now it's just like it's too late. I mean, there's no way they're going to catch up. I don't know what they're planning on doing, but I don't know what we're going to do about water here, Mickey. Do they talk about that in Houston, our situation here?
No, we've got a pretty good grasp on it. But, you know, down where you're at, that's, they just neglected it and let it get out of hand. And it, you know, two or three years from now, we may get one of those years where it fills every single lake up. I mean, everything out your way, all those lakes are just, they're dry.
Yeah, you know, we haven't had the tropical action in the Gulf. We haven't hardly anything in the Gulf.
That's what y'all need. I know it's, you know, it's a bad thing to happen, structurally, but environmentally, it'd be good for your area to pull a storm down there with real
flush everything out.
Abundance of rainfall and replenish that parched area. It's Blaine, the other day, I think it was 10, 12 days ago, he called me and said, I'm gonna send you some pictures because you're not going to believe it. A thunderstorm built up in about a five-mile area there on top of one of his ranches and rained 6 hours, or 6 inches in 3 hours.
Man, that's nuts. That had to be good. That had to be good for his place. Golly. Man.
And then about a week later, he got an inch of rain there. So he's blessed here lately. He's on.
Well, I don't know if you saw the radar, but 2 days ago, Bath and Bay got about 2 inches in the bay.
I saw that glob on Bath, and I'm going,
That really helped. Yeah.
So I switched over to another radar site, and it was spot on. I thought the first site I looked at, it was just something false, but it wasn't.
Well, see what those tides did in the Gulf, those tropical storms that pushed the grass up on the shoreline and cleaned our water out. And we've had tons of grass. And this big flow we had here, this big high tide, is going to leave a bunch of grass on the shoreline. So thank God we at least had this one good tide. Because if you have just a real neutral tide in the fall, don't have a lot of stuff going on, you have a serious grass problem in the wintertime. You know, we have a lot of floating grass here, and it just really dictates what you can throw at the trout.
Yeah,
you know,
you
want to throw the corky the stuff. But,
you want to throw the treble hook baits and multi-hook baits and all that for bigger bites, but there's just days you can't do it. I mean, you're wasting your time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But a soft plastic will catch big fish. We've seen that. Everybody, you know, it's pros and cons on that. Oh, soft plastic, you're just fishing for little ones. Well, no,
The
biggest trout I've ever caught in my life have been on, you know, rat-tail bass assassins and baits like that, you know.
Yeah, my personal best came on a Bass Assassin, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Plum chartreuse, you know.
Oh, man. Plum crazy, baby. All right, let me knock this break out. I'll be right back, Cliff. Hang on. We'll talk about that big trout. How about that? All right.
All right.
Well, folks, Boyd's One Stop. They're the home of the supercharged Super Slammy Powerhouse Croakers, located right at the base of the Texas City Dyke at 227 Dyke Road. And if you're looking for quality live bait for your next fishing trip, look no further than Boyd's. From their tanks to your live well, that bait's as good as it can possibly be. And there's no better way to live your bait or your tournament fish than with their oxygen response system. Check them out firsthand at the store. They have them all on display, different size bottles, all their regulators, diffusers. And if you need more info, just give Jason Cogman a call at 281-701-8107. And when you're by the store, check out all their wild-caught Gulf shrimp. No farm-raised at Boyd's. It's all wild-caught. And their Cajun Grill next door, they put out some really good food at great prices. And their Santa Fe location, unbelievable. Everybody brags about that. 409-945-4001, or check them out at boydsonestop.com. When you do, please tell them Captain Mickey sent you. Good morning, and welcome back to the Outdoor Show. All right, it's 6:36. All right, Cliff.
Man, what kind of snake picture did you send me there? God.
I forgot to tell you, but they killed that dove hunt the other day at Blaine's. That's a 7-footer.
I never seen that.
I think it's about a half inch over 7 feet. Is that a monster or what? Did you see the head on that thing?
Yeah, I can't believe he grabbed that thing. It's big as his fist. Man.
Well, it's got two guys holding it up, JP and Terry Moore.
Man. That reminds me of that snake that Barry, my buddy, was sitting in Laredo on the blind, and this cottontail runs out in the middle of the road and just dies right in front of him. And he got struck by that rattlesnake. He said this big old 6-footer runs out, it crawls out there in the road to eat him right there in the
deer. Wow.
But he struck that rabbit and let him go out there and die. But man, you know that snake had eaten a few rabbits.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Quail, whatever they can.
I don't know if you got a snake boot big enough for that one, Mickey. It'd have to come up to your crotch.
They'd have to be snake hip boots.
Can you
imagine? My God.
It's funny, we don't have them in Alice like you guys got. Like they got in Laredo, Blaine's got them. We don't have them like that.
It's that sandy soil down there that grow those big snakes, man.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's what Blaine claims it is. You know, that good red dirt they have, that red sand.
Well, We kill some monsters at Sarita Safari on the Kennedy and King Ranch, but nothing like that. You know, we see some five-footers. But there, it was so hard in the Kennedy. So those caliche rows are right down the middle of those fields of Sacagawea grass. And Sacagawea is like monkey grass, those little clumps. Those snakes, if you didn't shoot him in the road, as soon as he got in that grass, he's just disappeared. Because they crawl in all those little holes in that grass. You can't shoot them. So you see one on the road, you got to, you know, get up there real quick to get him because he's gone. And the weird thing was quail hunting. So you shoot a quail in that Sacagawea, man, it's just crazy to try to get in there and get that bird out without getting bit. So
well, that's how Bobby got bit down there at Blaine's years ago, 30, 40 years ago. Reached down to pick up a quail that was flopping around, and the snake had run over there to it. And luckily, it had already hit the quail, so he got a dry bite. You know, he had some swelling in his hand, but it didn't kick in. He didn't get enough poison to hurt him or go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I call that a dry bite. It ain't any bite good, whether it's poisonous or not.
I don't like that stuff, man. God almighty.
You know, I had a customer one day. We were out in the boat fishing, and was opening day of dove season. And his son went to University of Texas, and they were dove hunting, and a big snake like that hit him, and it hit him right in his thigh below his hip. And said it felt like somebody hit him with a baseball bat. That snake popped him so hard.
Oh, and man.
He had a lot of problems, a lot of skin graft, and, I mean, he like lost his leg over that. It's pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's kind of different. You know, it just depends on how much they get in you.
Yeah, they say that the little ones are really bad.
But you can watch them when they milk those snakes, you know, and grab them behind the head and open their jaws and then lay them on that cup. And, man, some of them are just, that's a lot of venom in there, lots of it. And they'll even, after they back off, they'll hit them again and still get more venom out of there, out of those glands. They hold a lot.
Yeah, they say they're the worst when they've been hibernating in the winter, and that venom builds up when they first come out of the den in March and stuff, when they really have a lot of venom. You know, I had a guy, Ed Eggins, in Sweetwater, Texas. He was big rattlesnake hunter, and he would take those tubes, those siphon hose, and pour gasoline down those big dens, and there'd be 15 snakes come out of there. They had a big snake roundup in Sweetwater, Texas. And he was saying about all the people that got bit in that time. And some of those snake handlers been bit several times. I don't know how they deal with that.
God. My Uncle T. Mobley, my grandmother's brother, he had a cotton ranch up near Gatesville, right there next to Fort Hood. And he'd been bit so many times that he was almost immune to them.
Mm. Mm. I don't think I want to try that, buddy.
T. Mobley.
Hey, the worst thing in my business is getting fish hooked, and I seem like I get a lot of that. I can't imagine having some venom in there, but I can't get nothing. I can't get close to anything sharp. I've had the worst year on hooks I've ever had. I don't know how many hooks I've dug out of me this year. I think I'm just getting old and slow and not getting out of the way.
Well, I'll tell you one treble hook that you don't want to get in you is a triple grip. You know, remember those triple grip hooks we'd use in tournaments on our corkies and topwaters?
Oh, those are big. That big barb. Yeah,
and plus, you know, the bend in it, it's a counter-rotating hook, and the more you pull on it, the more meat it grabs. And
I forgot about those.
Whew, Lord have mercy.
Hey, what are those hooks? You know, Mike Herring is sponsoring that hook. He sent me some the other day, and I'm out of them. I'm trying to think what the name of that was. The replacement is so good. Was it... God, I'm going to go look at that box. Mike is repping those things again. Mickey, they're great replacement hooks. David Rousey told me about them. I'm going to go find a box here in a minute. But he's got some really good hooks. It just, man, they got some good wire on them. That's what's trouble with some of these real thin hooks. They just straighten out too bad because our fish will run up against a rock and then stick those hooks in a rock and straighten them out, you know, pretty easy. So,
well, that was the only problem we had way back in the day when, you know, the early Paul Brown years were those hooks. You know, they were VMC hooks, but they weren't strong enough for some application. I mean, a redfish would just destroy them.
Oh, I know it. Yeah, it's those red hooks. I love them red hooks. Jane and I'm putting those are some, you know. And it's funny because they don't seem like they corrode, Mickey. I'll I'll find a corky someone stuck in one of my boxes, you know, somewhere that didn't rinse it off, and it's been sitting there for a year, and those hooks are still good. It may be rusted around the split ring or something, but the hooks are still good.
Yeah.
Those seem to be some really good hooks.
Well, the thing with corkies is the weight of the hooks is so crucial to the action on the bait.
Yes, and it is. Yes,
you can't put too much of an overkill of a heavier hook on there. It'll ruin the action on the bait. You can't work it the way you want to. But
yeah, and I tell you what we're having. I always had trouble with floater corkies, so I throw a lot of floaters.
Yeah.
Okay, that front hook on that floater is so important. If you switch it out and change the balance on it, it's going to stick too far nose up or too far nose down.
Right.
That hook that it comes with is just perfect, that red hook. I've had people want to put an oversized hook on it, and it just kills the action. Doesn't go side to side, doesn't wobble, doesn't shake down. It's just, you know, they figured that hook size out on those baits that work right. And there's nothing worse than throwing a fat boy out there that it's sinking tail first, because you change something on it, you know, it sinks.
Yeah, I like
first.
A bait most, to sink head first.
You have to, because
like
you think about a mullet
down, you know, and then you use your line and your rod tip to work the head back up and make it do that swimming action back to the surface, and then drop it head. Mm-hmm. That's what we were doing over at Sabine when we had all those giant fish over there, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s. We were taking the original corkies, and I was putting a bigger triple grip hook on the front hook, you know, the head hook.
You had to go down nose first, yep.
And, yeah, where you could get a good fall out of it, because we were the way those fish were over there, all those clamshell dumps that held all those giant trout, everybody would go in shallow and fish shallow, and they'd catch nice fish in there, 4 and 5 pounders, but those big 7 and 8 pounders were out off the drop-off, on the clamshells, on the knuckle shells.
Uh-huh.
And, man, when I changed those baits out, and just that idea struck me that day, because we were having to work them so slow to get them down, and the current wasn't allowing us to get down in the strike zone. We were missing a lot of those big fish. Well, that night I got some new corkies out and put triple grips on the front. Buddy,
yeah,
I want to tell you what, it was a game changer. And it enabled you didn't lose those big fish with that triple grip hook on the head, because they always swallow it head first. And
Your front hook is the most important one. That's where the game is won and lost.
Front
hook is it. And I tell you something else we did that we really messed up our corky. So before Paul Brown put rattlers in them, these guys would always bring these little clear insert rattlers.
They're clear rattle chambers. I used to buy them by the dozens.
Yes, and the people would stick them in the tail and kill the action of the corky.
No, you got to stick them in the front.
You got to stick them in the front of the head. Because that's, you know, I'd see those guys, why not? I'd grab it, and you have one on the tail. I said, look, you got to take this out of the tail.
Well, it's easier to put in back there. You had to really work at it to get it properly put into the front of the bait.
Man, I still got some corkies that Paul first built. He put that real loud rattler in there, and he made some for the surf. It didn't have a cork insert. It had a wire like a Mansfield Mahler.
Yeah.
And then halfway through that wire, it's got a big glass rattler. That was the loudest rattler.
Yeah, that
was
a good one,
man. It was
so
good to surf. The fish broke it, Mickey. They would bite it so hard they would break that glass.
Oh, sure. Well, hey, reach in your box and grab another one.
Yeah, I know. It's a bad problem to have, right? That's like I tell people, they catch an 8-pound trout on the bass. Says, oh, he ripped my bass. I said, dude, you just caught a 30-inch trout. Who cares if he ripped your bass?
Yeah, who cares about a 50-cent bait, man?
Yeah, or less than that.
You just broke off a $15 topwater a while ago, and you wasn't worried about it. You worried about a soft plastic.
Oh, man.
Fisherman.
That topwater. Yeah, I know. It's funny how they'll complain about, you know, and it's, I get this all winter long, how people complain about the softness of a bass ass, and look. That bass assassin.
That's why it's good, because it's soft and it has ton of action on it.
When it's cold, it has a lot of action. I have these guys that fish them at night. They'll fish the dark ones at night, and they barely twitch them at night. And just that little shake of that tail, those fish feel that vibration. They'll pick it up. Even when they're super, super cold, they'll pick it up. And you take a hard plastic, like sticking straight up like a pencil, they won't touch it. And it's funny how that works. And, I, you know, it's just and that's like some of these baits that we throw in the winter on the bottom, like the double D that don't go down. That's when you go to the other Meridine, the redder one, that's the slow sink down.
Yeah.
You know, then you let it slow sink down where you think it's down about a foot from the bottom, and you work it back up. So it's we do have such a good quiver now of stuff, Mickey, compared to what we used to have. You know,
God,
we used to have nothing. A couple plastics and some spoons and a then Broken Back, and then Jumpin' Minnow came out. Look where we are now. We got just a, it's like the Golden Corral of lures.
It
like,
is.
Like, what do you
it's
throw,
crazy.
You know? I've been in my garage taking ice chests full of stuff and just throwing them in the ice chest, trying to give them away. I said, look, I'm just not going to, you know, not ever going to use this stuff. It's just piling up. I'm just, I've become a tackle hoarder. I just can't believe it.
Well, I don't have a problem tearing up soft plastics and you know, you can always put another one on and they're not expensive.
No, it's not. And Robin and Mike Herring, they all take good care of us on Little John's and Bass. It's not like we have to worry about it, you know.
You know, that's back when, you know, before we had all these rat tails and, you know, all these different soft plastics, we were just pretty much, Hoagie had that one shad tail, and it looked like a real shad, same shape, everything. And you had the Kelly Wiggler shrimp tail, the Boone Tout, and the Hoagie shrimp tail. And Hoagie shrimp tail outfished all of them because it was soft, it would tear up easy, but it had that good action on it that you just couldn't.
It was a game changer. Yep.
Couldn't compete with it.
Remember Dusty Rose, I think, owned that company.
Yeah, it was Jack Hollingsworth was the original guy.
Yes, he was, yes. And I used to laugh at Doug. He was so smart. They would send him 50-pound boxes of Hoagies.
I'm telling
like
you.
Boxes.
I mean,
and then
Jack
he would
brought
give
me
all the crooked wick. He would give me all the crooked ones. He would he thought, you know,
oh, Doug would weed through them. He'd give you all the culls.
He would give me all the crooked ones. He was smart, you know. He was smart. I used to laugh at him. Then I started getting some.
No, nobody ever accused Doug of being dumb. I can tell you that.
It was good stuff.
That guy. What was that? What? Where did he put in? What's the name of that other bait camp there on the other side of the bridge? From 37,
he used to put in over there. It was clam. No, it was clam.
Clams. That's it. That's it. I was trying to remember that
the
other day.
Clams.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah. He'd eat a honey bun every morning. They had a mic. They come with a microwave and Doug would put that big old honey bun in there. And it was so funny because that marina always had honey buns. I think Doug was the only one that put that big honey bun in the microwave every morning to eat it, but. Man, I think about some of those garbage.
Your water issue made the Wall Street Journal rolling to send us that text.
I saw that. I thought you sent me that text.
This Texas town is an energy powerhouse. It's running out of water. Well, it's not going to be much of an energy powerhouse after that.
Oh, that hurts, doesn't it?
God, it does.
And you got a whole Gulf of America full of water. All they got to do is get the salt out of it. Come on,
well,
man.
Well, you know, they're talking about a desalinization plant over here. In the, you know, Baycliff Dickinson area right there where the old NRG power plant came out of there into Dickinson Bay. But, I mean, I don't want to get involved in this and talk too much about it till, I mean, the TCEQ hadn't even approved it or given them permits for this yet. But they're already talking about it. But, I mean, do we really know how bad it's going to be for the local environment? I mean, we don't know that yet.
No, we don't.
And, you know, y'all already have one back there in the back of y'all's bay that's dumping out, what, in Cayo de Gruo somewhere in there?
That's
coming out that hadn't hurt anything yet that you know of.
No, we don't know.
It's, you know, water's the lifeblood of everything that, you know, walks, crawls, or swims, or what have you, and, we're just we're gonna have to work around it, but I mean,
I think East Texas is the only place that doesn't have a water issue in Texas. You think
well,
about
no,
it?
Well, no, I mean that watershed is unbelievable. You know, with the rivers
it's
and
the
everything.
Best water ever. Yeah.
Hey, bring it over. Find somewhere to build it in Trinity Bay and salt my water up. I could use the extra salinity here in the back all year long. Bring it, man.
Yeah. Well, this is a problem we got. You know, they argue, but no one's even come up with a plan to even start anything. Nothing's even been started yet. So that's what the thing is.
No, they're testing the waters in the different areas.
I don't know what's going on here, man. But
I
don't know what's happening here. But it's pretty sad. You can't wash your truck. You got to barely rinse your boat off. And we're getting ready to go to stage four.
They're going to pull a hammer on something.
Yeah. Stage four is going to be real tough. I don't know what that requires, but we're getting ready to go into stage four where – I don't think the people.
Well, y'all were at 11%. Is it below that yet?
I didn't look. I'm sure it is. We haven't had anything go into it.
Gosh,
it's nuts. And you look at all the people that bought their put all their life saving in the Lake Corpus Christi Lake, and they got these beautiful homes with all these piers going out to nothing, to a desert. They got these piers, and there's no water at the end of the pier. The water's like 500 yards at the end of their pier.
Well, they're growing great vegetation down there, so when the water does come back up, they're going to have some unbelievable fishing.
You know, they got more properties on it, they got more property area, but
it's
crazy how that works, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I'm hoping we'll get something down here. I just, you know, we didn't get any tropical activity, Mickey. When's the last time you saw the Gulf of Mexico with no tropical waves or nothing?
Man,
the whole hurricane season. That was nuts.
I'm telling you.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
I don't think I have either. It just, it's been a mild year.
Yeah. I don't know what the hell that's going to affect the winter, but it's going to do something.
Well, now with this La Nina thing kicking in, they're calling for a warmer winter. Which mm-hmm. probably means it'll be wet if it's warmer.
Yeah.
And, but that's what the experts are saying. But from what I'm seeing from the local wildlife, all the squirrels and crows, gathering nuts. They've been stripping my pecan and live oak trees for 2 months now, and burying pecans. And the crows must have a rookery somewhere close to me because, buddy, they're in and out of my property all day hauling that stuff off. And
it's a farmer's.
You'd think you got a cold winter coming, you know?
The farmers usually know, and that almanac, I mean, the farmers can usually tell me. I haven't heard any of the farmers reach out and say what it's going to be yet. You know, usually by this time they'll say it's going to be cold or wet, or I'm hoping it's cold and wet. I hope it's really cold. I like it. I don't want to lose any fish, but, man, we catch those really big pigs, Mickey, when it's cold.
Yeah.
They shut down their bite. And they'll
yeah, we don't want that bitter cold like an Arctic blast and all that. But, because you guys are just now, y'all bounced back so quick from that 2021 deal. I mean.
Did Matagorda come back, Mickey?
It's trying to. It just gets so much pressure. But it has. I mean, they were the hardest hit on the whole coast.
Mm-hmm. And that's where that three fish limit had to really kick in for you guys and stuff like that when you had that freeze.
Right. Well, we were hit harder than anybody let on to be 2021, and we lost a few fish in 2023. Remember, we had that cold spell. All right, Cliff. Well, hey, man, hang in there. I'm working. Everybody needs to do a rain dance for your area, I can tell you that.
Thanks, buddy.
Good gosh. All right, man. Well, hey, somebody wants to come down and fish with you this winter, give them some info how they can reach you, bud.
All right, Mickey, Minerico, 361-949-0707. Hey, and if anybody's trying to get a hold of me, I had no phone service yesterday, so I was trying to get back with one of my clients, Matt, and I never could send a text. So I'm going to try again today, but if you don't get me, try again, because some days it doesn't work here.
There you go.
Anyway. Appreciate you, Mickey. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
And, hey, knock on wood, first time in a while I hadn't dropped you during our talk.
You shouldn't have said that. All right, buddy.
next week. There's always next week. All right,
there's
buddy.
Always next week.
See
buddy.
You later. All right. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today's show. We'll be back in the morning bright and early right here at Sports Radio 610 KILT Houston.